You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Let's fire up the grill. This weekend celebrates the birth of our country, declaring independence. But what happens when a national holiday known for barbecuing and fireworks and partying butts up against an international pandemic? Here's California Governor Gavin Newsom yesterday talking about that backyard barbecue that you may have gotten invited to this holiday weekend.
We come with good intentions. We may come with masks. We may be wearing those masks at the beginning, but invariably after a few hours, after a drink or two, after eating some food, masks then are put aside and families begin to mix.
That's the governor there explaining that, you know, things sort of get really lax and you become very chill at this outdoor gathering. And maybe you're not thinking about the mask and other things. Here to talk about what to expect this 4th of July holiday weekend in the Southland and along the Central Coast is KCRW's Catherine Barnes. Hey, Catherine.
Hey, Steve.
Let's start with the largest and the loudest part of most 4th of July celebrations. That, of course, the fireworks. Are there any public events for fireworks going on this weekend?
There are not many to check out, Steve. All the major public fireworks displays have been canceled. There are a few outliers still planning to shoot them off in places like 29 Palms out in the desert, Victorville, Apple Valley, a couple other places, but they're asking you to watch them from home. San Bernardino is doing it drive-in style. You can pay $40 to sit in your car and watch them go off at San Manuel Stadium. And a few cities like Rancho Cucamonga are doing fireworks displays that you can live stream from home or watch from your backyard.
Well, speaking of your backyard, I mean, are fire officials worried, Catherine, that a lot of amateurs will be out there with their own fireworks and perhaps causing all kinds of problems with that?
Yeah, they're always worried about that each 4th of July weekend, but this year especially. I spoke with Eric Scott from the LA City Fire Department, and he said they're expecting to see more fireworks getting set off at home than in past years because all these public events have been canceled and people have nowhere to go. He told me tree fires are common with these types of fireworks. And as we're all aware, those trees can then catch the grass and the brush nearby that's been drying up over the summer. And all of a sudden, we have a big problem on our hands, especially if it gets windy this weekend. Eric Scott said, aside from wildfire danger, these fireworks can also result in really serious personal injuries, too.
Sometimes they go off too early and people then have some significant hand injuries. We've even seen children lose their fingers. Sometimes the wick might take longer than thought, or people aren't paying attention. Then they get inquisitive. They run up, they go take a look at it, and that's when it explodes and causes the injury.
Setting off your own fireworks is illegal in the city of Los Angeles and many other parts of Southern California. So you do run the risk of getting a knock on the door from police if you try it this weekend.
All right, well, let's talk about another popular pastime for the 4th of July weekend, especially in Southern California. It's summertime. It's going to be hot. People want to go to the beach, right?
Yeah, and going to the beach is going to be a lot trickier this year, too. LA County is shutting down all of its beaches as of midnight tonight and through the weekend to dissuade people from gathering. And that announcement set off a bit of a domino effect. Ventura decided to do a hard close on their beaches as well. Here's Ventura's police chief, Darren Schindler.
People will drive an hour and a half to go to the beach, and especially with the 4th of July, we just didn't want to have an influx of people that would add to the health problem.
Now, today, Santa Barbara and Orange County also announced they'll close their beaches. And there are a lot of locals who are really happy to hear that. They were worried any open beaches would drive a lot of out-of-towners into the area. Here's Santa Barbara resident Sharon Burns speaking at a recent city council meeting.
It feels very much like we are going to be inundated from not one but two counties that will be desperate to get out during a hot weekend and have some fun and recreation. And there's a concern, too, that a lot of the visitors that are coming here are going to be visiting gas stations, convenience stores, restaurants, where, guess what? Low-wage hourly workers are put in the position of having to be the enforcement arm for the mask-wearing provision.
All right, Catherine, I guess that brings us to another big part of the 4th of July weekend, which is going out to eat, right? Dining out. People are going to want to go maybe get some barbecue or a steak or some veggie options. So more than a dozen counties, all up and down the state, have shut down indoor dining at restaurants again. What does that mean heading into the weekend? What are the choices there?
Well, the choices are basically takeout or outdoor dining. So the places that have enough space to put tables outside, they're obviously at an advantage here. But really, everyone is scrambling to figure out the best system to handle these historically busy summer weekends. It's tricky because you want to make sure customers are happy, but you also want to make sure your staff is safe. Like Sharon mentioned in her comment, it's often the hosts and the bussers and the waiters that are bearing the brunt of enforcing mask wearing and physical distancing. And honestly, they're really not making enough money to be responsible for something like that.
How are restaurants going about that?
Well, I spoke with one restaurant owner. His name's Aaron Duncan. He owns a pizza restaurant and tap room in Ventura called Fluid State, and they're lucky to have enough space for 25 tables outside. But he said during Memorial Day weekend, they saw this massive influx of Angelenos coming up, and many of them weren't wearing masks and weren't respecting the rules. So the following weekend, they actually instituted a locals-only policy where anyone who wanted to dine in had to prove they lived in the 805 region. So they had to live in Ventura, Santa Barbara, or San Luis Obispo.
That sounds pretty extreme. I mean, did he get blowback from it?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he said locally it was really well received and some out-of-towners understood the reasoning behind it, but there were definitely angry Angelenos walking away from the host stand. And going into this weekend, he's taking a slightly less controversial approach. Instead of the locals-only policy, he set up an Eventbrite page where you can essentially purchase a reservation at one of their outdoor picnic tables for a barbecue dinner.
So right away, it's basically like a ticketed event, like a private event for that day. And if you don't have a ticket, then there's no reason to wait in line, essentially.
So he hopes this will take some of the enforcement pressure off his staff, and it could help with contact tracing if there was to be a COVID-19 case.
All right, so all of that notwithstanding, what can you do this weekend, Catherine?
Well, to sum it up, you can dine al fresco, but bring your mask. You can order takeout. You can grill at home with your immediate family or your pod, as people are calling it. It'll definitely be a lot different than other 4th of July weekends we've had, but I'm sure you can find some ways to make it fun.
And the key word, of course, is safety. Not only watching out for your own health, but watching out for others as well. KCRW's Catherine Barnes. Happy 4th of July, Catherine.
Happy 4th, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Well, limited options for the holiday weekend extend to professional sports as well. If gatherings inside dining rooms and bars and beaches and trails are frowned upon, don't even think about thousands of your friends and neighbors in the stands at Dodger Stadium. From the WNBA to the NHL and the NFL, major league sports are on hiatus due to COVID-19. If you're a fan of the NBA or baseball, you're looking forward to perhaps a restart of basketball and spring training, respectively. Maria Torres covers the Angels for the LA Times, and she's with us today. Hey, Maria.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. And Ramona Shelburne, who has been on this program before, an NBA insider, senior writer for ESPN, she joins us as well. Hi, Ramona.
Nice to talk to you again.
You bet. I'm going to start with you, Ramona, because the Lakers have been practicing. They're possibly heading to Disney World in Orlando to wrap up the NBA season for what's called a bubble season. Explain what a bubble season is.
Well, I think they like to call it a campus as opposed to a bubble because the bubble feels way more restrictive than they want everyone inside the campus, I guess you want to call it, to feel. It was really important to the players and coaches, teams, that when they go to Orlando, they don't feel like they're in jail, that they feel like, yes, we are making a sacrifice to do this. We are potentially spending 3.5 months away from our families, away from the world, being sequestered in this environment. But you hear everyone in the NBA say words like and phrases like, you know, it's not for everybody. If you don't want to go, we understand. If you want to leave, we understand. What players, coaches, staffers are going to experience over the next couple of months in Orlando is something we haven't seen before.
Florida has seen this huge surge in coronavirus cases. And, you know, alas, here we are in Florida talking about the NBA.
Mm-hmm. Well, the issue for the NBA is how safe and how secluded really is this campus. And the reason they call it a campus is that it's outdoors. We're not at Disney World. It's the Disney Wide World of Sports Complex, which is a huge 200 something acre property in Orlando. It's near Disney World, but it's not like they're going on Splash Mountain, right? It's not like they're going on rides or interacting with the general public. So they don't want this to feel like jail. It's really important. They want this to feel like you're at a resort. But that's why they think that while it is troubling that the cases in Florida are rising, they don't think there's going to be much interaction between the general population in Florida and anybody in that NBA campus. The only real vulnerabilities are the workers who would come and go. And those workers have an incredible set of protocols that they're supposed to follow, even down to the housekeeping staff that is cleaning rooms. They're only going to clean once a week. And when they clean your room, no one will ever be in the room when a player or a coach is in there. But when they clean your room, they're only supposed to do one floor at a time. Just in case that housekeeper has COVID, the idea would be to minimize the number of rooms that person was in. And they'll be wearing full protective equipment. So I think they're following best practices. They put out a 113-page safety manual on how to follow these best practices. But as we all know with this disease, you know, you can only do so much. And I think everybody is just hoping that, you know, the best laid plans result in as much of a normal NBA season and game and environment and as safe an environment as they can find. The team that ends up coming out and winning this championship in Orlando, provided we even get that far, I know there's some talk that you'd have an asterisk, but I personally think whoever wins this should get a gold star. I mean, it's whoever stayed in shape in the layoff, whoever can overcome all this, whoever can play and win without what's going to be any kind of home court advantage now, because everybody will be playing on a neutral court. I think that's going to be an incredible accomplishment.
Maria, I want to bring you into the conversation now. You cover baseball. I know Major League Baseball is doing spring training, which is ridiculous because it's July 2nd. You know, the pitchers and catchers reported a long time ago, and here we are.
So they might as well call it spring 2.0.
I don't even know what to call it. Summer training. There's a short season that's been approved with details being hammered out. 60 games, I believe. What's that going to look like?
Yeah, so it'll be radically different from a normal spring training, which, and by the way, MLB decided to call it summer camp. So it's sponsored by Camping World. Spring training is covered by, it's sponsored by Camping World as well. So MLB summer camp sponsored by Camping World is taking place across the United
Never lose across an opportunity to sell it, Maria. Never lose an opportunity to make some money off of it.
Definitely not. So these summer camps are going to be look very interesting. So teams are each given the ability to have what they call 60 player pools. So they'll be able to house at their own home stadium. So the Dodgers will be training at Dodger Stadium, the Angels at Angel Stadium. So summer camps will look kind of like spring training in the sense that, you know, players and coaches will be working on the fundamentals that you usually see at spring training. The only thing is that instead of being spread across, you know, four different fields at a spring training complex, they're for the most part like confined to the one field at Angel or Dodger Stadium. And of course, there's the matter of like physical and social distancing in place too. So there's not going to be a lot of really close contact between coaches and players while they're working on their fundamentals. So that'll look strange, I'm sure. Starting tomorrow, we'll be able to go into the stadiums and watch workouts. So I'll have a little bit more insight after that. I can't really picture it all that well in my head right now.
I know that the players' union, there was a back and forth between Major League Baseball and the players' union, right? Has that been hammered out to the players? Is everybody sort of on board with this, or are there still things that need to be addressed?
There are definitely a lot of things that still need to be addressed. So in the end, obviously the league came to a decision that it's going to have a season, but it wasn't through an agreement with the union. The union basically, at the end of, you know, 2.5 months of contentious negotiation, decided that they were not going to accept the league's final proposal and just let the league impose a season of 60 games. So the main problem that they were encountering was that the league did not want to pay a full prorated rate to the players for the number of games that they were playing. The union decided that wasn't going to fly with them. And they decided rather than come to an agreement with the league on a 60-game season at a prorated rate, where had they done that, they would not have had the chance to file a grievance against the league. They decided to not accept the proposal and force the league to impose the season now they can file a grievance against the league for not operating in good faith.
Ramona, same thing for the NBA. Are players happy with their pay?
Well, yes, in the sense that, you know, the NBA has a different situation in that they'd already played 70% of their season. So, most players had been paid. Some players even get it written into their contracts that they get their full salary at the beginning of the year, or, you know, well before we've reached this mark in the season. So their issue is not going to be with this year. Next year is really going to be the big fight. A lot of it's going to depend on where we are as a country, where we are in the world in the fight against COVID. Do we have a vaccine? Is it going to be safe at all to have fans? You know, the reason I ask that is, or I posit that is that it, you know, if there is going to be no fans again next year, that is a huge loss in revenue. And that's the same issues that baseball just kind of worked through. And I don't even think they worked through them. They just kind of got to the end. And one side said, this is what we're doing. And the other said, okay, fine. I think you could see a similar labor fight in the NBA when they have to negotiate next year. But they're hoping that with the passage of time, with delaying the start of next season to what's probably going to be sometime in December, hopefully there's either better treatment or progress towards a vaccine to where they can project out and say, oh, fans are possible at some point next season. We'll see.
Ramona Shelburne, NBA insider and ESPN senior writer, and Maria Torres, who covers baseball, the Angels, for the LA Times. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It's Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. And finally today, we're going to end the show with the latest in our Helpers series. Let's hear from Mr. Rogers.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy. Oh, baby, have a little help. All I need is my brother. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Today, we're wandering the aisles of a grocery store in South Los Angeles. The coronavirus has caused jobless numbers to skyrocket across the county to more than 20%. Along with that rising number, a lot of food insecurity. You've probably seen the pictures, right? Cars lined up for miles, hoping to get food from the local food bank. Maybe you've been in one of those lines. Other nonprofits and pop-ups have tried to help as well. But there are a lot of food-insecure Angelenos who just can't get to those places. And a mutual aid group in South L.A. is trying to bridge that gap, bringing the grocery store or food bank to them.
I was like, get some volunteers, like ask who wants to be volunteers, log them down on our spreadsheet, and we can take calls like a few days a week, and we could just have, like, you know, younger, able-bodied, kind of healthy folks do these grocery medicinal service runs for them.
That's Tabisa Leigh Griffin, co-founder of People for People Los Angeles. It's a new group that provides groceries, hot food, and medical supplies to those who need it. The elderly, those with no transportation, those with disabilities, and those who are most affected by COVID-19, people of color, and Black communities. There's a delivery hotline for their service. It's available 7 days a week, noon to five. KCRW's Angel Carrera spent a day tagging along with one of their volunteers to see how it all goes down.
In three quarters of a mile, turn left onto South Central.
I'm in a car with one of People for People's volunteers, or runners as they call them, Candida. Tabisa Leigh says there are hundreds like her who give their time to do this work for the group. a day of running with them, it's like, well, I'll let Candida explain.
It's via text. The name will come through, the family's cell phone number, and the grocery list will come through. And also how many people are in the home. And then what I do is I call the family, introduce myself, and I'll let them know, hey, you know, my name is Candida. I'm going to be the young woman that's going to deliver your groceries. What time is best for you?
She got tipped off to the whole organization through her cousin, who shared an Instagram post that People for People needed volunteers. Candida's been doing this since the organization's start in early March. They serve most of LA with a focus on underserved communities. Today, she's delivering to an undocumented family of six. They're new to the program. She takes a peek at where they live.
My zone, from what I know, is South LA, Watts, Compton. Right now, I'm headed to Southgate. So that's like my general area.
First, we head to Northgate Gonzales Market. It's a big Mexican supermarket. On the way, I ask Candida what drew her into volunteering for something like this.
I want to do something for my community. I want to help. If I was in a position where, God forbid, but I couldn't go out because of COVID-19, or maybe I just didn't have the means to go out, I would want people from the community to volunteer for me and my baby. And it kept me sane as far as like going out and do something. And as we all know, going to the grocery store has become like a field trip nowadays because everything else is shut down. So we're like, woo, we get to go to the store. We get to go to Target, stand in a 20-minute line. We actually get to leave our homes, so it's been exciting.
Candida says she and her daughter, who's a gymnast, have been going a little crazy from being so cooped up due to COVID-19.
Let me tell you what did make me go crazy. They shut Disneyland down. And I was like, oh no, like low-key, high-key, Disneyland being shut down is not the business. And I'm just like, y'all need to stop playing. Close, keep these school closed, that's fine with me. But open up these nail shops, please, because I'm serious about manis and pedis, and open up Disneyland. That's all I'm worried about. Nail shops and Disneyland. I'm sorry, that's just the truth.
But we're not going to Disneyland or for a mani-pedi. We're at the store, knocking off this list of food and baby stuff and household items. The LA Food Bank and other organizations that depend on volunteers have had a harder time getting help during the pandemic. People are understandably afraid of catching the virus and spreading it to their families. But Candida isn't.
No, I'm not. I don't live in fear, I should say. I know that that makes me like super privileged and a millennial, and because I know we're the, you know, we're the generation. But no, I am not scared. I have gone to hospital a couple of times. I picked my dad up. He suffers from sickle cell anemia. So, and they do like the whole temperature, but I'm not worried. I just feel like I'm just going to live my life and pray to God. I'm going to pray or I'm going to worry. I can't do both. Nobody can.
In Southgate, we pull up to a small white house with a black iron gate.
Hi, I'm outside with your groceries. Okay.
The mother and two of her kids come out to meet us. We drop the $250 worth of groceries outside the gate, keeping our social distance. And we've completed our work for the day.
I'm sending the pictures to the organization so that they can, you know, share the pictures via Instagram. And then I have to send pictures of the receipts and just pretty much let them know that I'm done with the run.
Tubby Slay says all the money for food and medicine is crowdfunded from the community. The co-founder of People for People is talking to me at the group's home base, her home. She's working towards a PhD in history at UCLA. She's balancing her demanding studies with running this organization.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot, Angel. Like, I think, you know, there could be days where we'll have like anywhere from 50 to 60 calls in like a 2-hour time period.
Tabisale says that even if she does burn out from the rigors of academia and helping out her community and trying to balance a life on top of all this, she tells me that People for People will live on past her.
I'm really nobody within the organization. Like, it's really run by our runners, our volunteers, and the rest of the folks on the hotline and stuff like that, and the people that have shared the flyer.
It's decentralized. So if the co-founders leave, if Tabisale leaves, if Candida leaves, it'll keep going on. As long as there are others willing to step up and help out their communities. People for people. For KCRW, I'm Angel Carreras.
another helper. That's all for us today. Next week, live music venues are in trouble because live music, for now, is a thing of the past. How will they survive? A lot of hands on this program. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Amy Toff, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Kat Yore, Paul Smith, Mario Saavedra, Amy Roken, Christine Comito, and Christian Bordoff. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thank you for your ears and time. Happy 4th, and have a great weekend.